This is the crisis point.
Welcome to the Crisis Point podcast, where, like G.K. Chesterton, we discuss nothing except for politics and religion because, well, there's nothing else to discuss. I am your host, Michael Warren Davis, the editor of Crisis Magazine, and I am joined by a very special guest, the expert Vaticanologist Edward Penton, who has just put out a new book with the Sophia Institute Press called The Next Pope. And, you know, I sort of pride myself on knowing a little bit about the Catholic Church, but this book blew me away. The depth of the research and the depth of Edward's knowledge of the Sacred College and of just the inner workings of the Vatican is just astonishing. So I heartily urge you to, all of you, to buy it and to read it. And I'm delighted to be joined by Edward today. So, Mr. Penton, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I've been following the commentary on the book, and a lot of it is just, you know, the way book reviews usually go, which is just people using the book as an excuse to sort of assert their own opinion. And everyone wants to talk about, you know, Cardinal Tagle and Cardinal Parolin. But I think that there's actually a lot more to this question than just the people that are being aggressively promoted through the ranks of the Vatican. It's you know, the permissive will of the Holy Spirit is at work here. So I'm very curious. You know, for instance, you included Cardinal Seurat in your book. Do you what do you think his odds are of actually, you know, becoming the next successor to Saint Peter?
Well, I mean, all of the candidates, Michael, in the book, we believe have a pretty good chance, certainly compared to the rest of the college. That's not to say, of course, there are others that are strong candidates too, but we do think that given their backgrounds, their reputations, basically how well known they are too is an important factor, and where they come from, plus all whether their sanctifying office and their governing office and teaching office as bishop, these are all factors that were played into it, and we felt that Cardinal Robert Seurat and others too, of course, like him, we felt do have a good chance. Also because there is the old saying that a fat pope follows a thin one, which means that often a more progressive pope might follow a conservative one and vice versa. And I think my sense, at least, and I think it's shared by quite a few others here, is that it will swing back more to a sort of more conservative and certainly a more, I think, a less turbulent figure, one who's going to cause a lot of problems. It's going to go back to someone who's very much a safe pair of hands, and someone like Cardinal Robert Seurat certainly fits that bill. He's not, of course, not the only one, but I think he fits it pretty well.
It's interesting that you know, John Paul II appointed Jorge Bergoglio to the Sacred College. So popes don't always know who it is that they're promoting, and clearly that's obviously going to be true of Pope Francis. So we talk about Pope Francis appointing, you know, sort of the necessary majority of cardinals where he could theoretically appoint his own successor, but he doesn't know how his own appointees are going to vote. Isn't that right?
That's right. It's a very unknown quantity, and just because he's appointed them doesn't mean, of course, they're going to vote in accordance with his direction and his vision. Certainly that has happened in the past, of course, and that is generally the case. It has been the case in the past, but it's not a hard and fast rule. And I think there's every chance that, especially as he's chosen many from the so-called peripheries, from the global south, where they're traditionally more conservative and more orthodox, if you like. I think that also doesn't make it certain that they'll follow in the line of his very much reformist vision. So yes, it's really anyone's guess what could happen. And of course, as you said earlier, the Holy Spirit is the one who plays the main role here.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, I've read this, and I think it's right that that Pope Francis, you know, when he was Jorge Bergoglio in Argentina, had a reputation for being more conservative than the mass of Jesuits in that country. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there might potentially be this kind of this backlash in a way among the developing world, the cardinals that come from the developing world, mm-hmm. who are, you know, have that sort of pastoral mentality that Pope Francis, I think, rightly emphasizes, but who also, you know, are just, you know, by the nature of their being in this sort of mission territory, are, you know, steeped in Orthodox Catholicism.
Yes, I think that's certainly possible, and you could get an interesting mixture of perhaps a very refined sort of mixture of a very pastoral pope, but also one who's also very Orthodox. And of course, most people would agree that those two aren't necessarily separate. In fact, there's no dichotomy between them. You could argue that a conservative pope is actually very pastoral, and by the essence of being very Orthodox. But yes, that could well happen, and I think it's certainly very possible. And as I say, I think it's very, very possible it could come from somebody from the Global South, from the peripheries, who he's already chosen himself.
Who was it recently? I think it was Archbishop Vigano said something like, there's nothing more pastoral than clarity, which I think is absolutely true, especially right. These days. So you know more about these things clearly than I do. But I'm curious if you do you have any sense that we're not Francis haters here by any means, but do you have any sense from the bishops and the cardinals that you know in the Vatican that is there any sense that much of what Francis has done is good and necessary, but is there a desire for more stability, more continuity, or just, you know, to sort of get back to the nuts and bolts of running the church?
I think there is a groundswell of a desire for that, I would say, yes. And I think that's been going on for a number of years now. A lot of cardinals won't speak up. They won't say that. But in private, that's certainly something that's discussed. And that's why there's quite a strong school of opinion to say that it's going to go back to the Italians, because the Italians would have a sort of safe pair of hands, and they know how the Vatican works, and they would certainly bring a more sort of calmer, more considered pontificate to follow Pope Francis. And there's every possibility that could happen. And as I say, it could swing back to somebody more Orthodox too. So we've got someone in there, a couple of candidates, Italians, who fit that bill. Cardinal Angelo Bagnasco is one, and Cardinal Mauro Piacenza is another. And they both would be considered, I think, very much sort of safe pair of hands, and certainly sound in the faith, sound in Orthodoxy.
Is this the longest we've ever gone without an Italian pope in modern history?
I don't know if it's the longest, but certainly, as I'm sure listeners know, we had Italian popes for 450 years, right up until John Paul II. So it wouldn't be anything particularly unusual if it did go back to an Italian, certainly. But it certainly has been a long time since an Italian pope, and perhaps it is time. Perhaps they'll feel it's time for an Italian to come back.
That's interesting. So there is, despite, you know, John Paul and Benedict and Francis, there is still kind of an Italian clique in the Vatican that will try to possibly just bring power back to Italy for its own sake.
Yes. Well, I mean, they still have quite a large block vote in the college. So what the Italians decide is still remains quite influential, because they have still quite a few cardinals in the college, even though the Pope hasn't appointed the usual cardinalatial sees like Genoa and Venice is still without a cardinal, whereas they used to always have a cardinal. That's not the case now, and yet they still have a good number of cardinals, also because the Pope has chosen bishops in faraway dioceses which haven't usually been cardinalatial sees, like Perugia, for example, and the cardinal there is the president of the bishops' conference. So they still have quite a lot of influence, and I think that would certainly be the case in the next conclave.
Fascinating. Well, you know, I don't have nearly as many contacts in the Vatican as you do, but one name that I've actually heard tossed around quite a lot is Cardinal Burke. And my contacts are not by any means, you know, all rad trads, but there, as you say in your terrific book, there's Cardinal Burke is probably best known not necessarily for his conservatism, but for his profound knowledge of canon law. So, not only is he the archetypical kind of conservative cardinal in his sensibilities, but if you wanted someone that was just going to know how to run the ship very efficiently, we'd say, a canon lawyer is the way to go. So what do you think his chances are? Because I think that was one inclusion that I think threw some commentators for a bit of a loop, but again, I mean, like Cardinal Sarah, I actually hear his name being discussed very seriously.
Yes. Well, I think with both Cardinal Sarah and Cardinal Burke, I think a lot of faithful feel that they speak to them. What they say resonates with them. It resonates with the Sensus Fidelium in a way that a lot of the others don't, because they have, or they do try to remain extremely faithful to the Church's teaching, and it gives them a certain prophetic voice. And I think Cardinal Burke... I think a lot of people see him having that. And so we really wanted to include him because he is very respected, especially among practicing faithful, many practicing faithful. And so we felt it was important to include him. But but I think what's interesting about this book is that a lot of people have perhaps images of Cardinal Burke and other cardinals within the book, which aren't actually in tune with reality, that it doesn't, it's a sort of media caricature of them. And I hope with this book that they get a real sense of who they really are. And when it comes to Cardinal Burke, what I think comes across, which hasn't or doesn't normally in the press, is his distinct pastoral nature. And he's a very, he's a very kind and a very gentle and meek priest and cardinal. He's very much a priest's cardinal. And yet that doesn't really come across usually in the media. And I think what I hope is that this book will show that through the facts, through the things that they've said and written, and the things that have happened as well, and how they've reacted to them and how they've governed. And so I hope that people can get a good picture and then make up their own mind from all the things that they read about these different cardinals, whether they think they have what it takes to be Pope.
Absolutely. Yeah, terrific. Well, There was one of the cardinals that's included in the book is Cardinal O'Malley. And a couple of years ago, I would have thought that he was, by far the best, the most likely candidate for the first American Pope. And I would have probably put him in the top three most likely, actually, for betting purposes. But I feel like since the McCarrick scandal, it's going to be very, very difficult for the College of Cardinals to choose an American, regardless of their merits. Do you think that that's true?
I think it's possible. I don't rule it out, though. And I think the days of when, they couldn't choose a cardinal who was from a superpower, going back to the French, I think the French Revolution, that sort of tradition goes. I don't know if that still applies. I think the college will be willing to look at all the cardinals and really decide regardless and pick who they think is the best candidate. And obviously that's just my hunch, but I have no real evidence to suggest that. But I just think that sort of barrier to choosing an American cardinal, I don't know if that's still there. I think both Cardinal O'Malley and Cardinal Burke are leading contenders as we put them in the book. And that's I don't think, as I say, that their nationality should necessarily preclude that.
Oh, well, that's terrific news for us Americans, certainly. I'm not trying to bait you by any means, but are there any other, I mean, Cardinal Dolan's name used to be sort of bandied about. Are there any other Americans that you think might be papable?
They didn't really come to mind while we were doing it. I think there may be some rising up through the ranks. I'm not sure. A lot of as I said earlier, the big cardinalatial sees those bishops haven't been chosen as cardinals. So, and of course, I mean, they could choose beyond the College of Cardinals. That's always possible. That's happened 8 times in history. So it could happen that they choose somebody who's a bishop, but I think it's highly unlikely. But yes, I don't think no other Americans really came to mind. And I'm not sure why we didn't include Cardinal Dolan in the end. I mean, some of the names were actually chosen already when I came onto the project, and so they were already being researched. But yes, I'm not quite sure why he wasn't in there. But maybe in the second edition we might put him in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe in the second edition, you know, Archbishop Gomez, for instance, will actually be a cardinal.
Yes.
And I think that's something that confused a lot because, you know, Archbishop Chaput is obviously he's retired now. But, he, you know, Los Angeles and Philadelphia were the two of the big, you know, usually the sees that go that where the archbishop automatically becomes a cardinal. But right. They did not. And it's not terribly mysterious why Archbishop Chaput was never chosen, but it is a little bit interesting that you know Archbishop Gomez is not a voting member of the College of Cardinals going into the next conclave, at least not as of now. Do you have any insight into why?
I don't. I mean, I there's the various rumors. I wouldn't want to entertain them because I don't know if they're true or not. But they're. It is a bit strange. And of course, if he were chosen, he'd become the first Hispanic American cardinal, I think, in history. And so it would be quite a milestone, and important, of course, for the big issue of immigration, which Pope Francis is a big priority for him. So I think, I really don't know. And it will be interesting to see if he does eventually become elevated, but it's getting late now, and I think I'm not sure of his age now, but he could well be coming up to retirement not too far away.
So you wrote this book really for cardinals as much as for, you know, a mass readership. Have you gotten any feedback from, you know, from the Sacred College on the depth of your research or the choices that you put in the book?
Not yet. I'm not sure whether they've got the copy yet. We're going to send them all a copy. It'd be interesting to see what they do say. I hope a number of them won't be upset that they're not. They find themselves not in it. I think it will be. They might be looking quite carefully to see if the names are in it. They should be getting it soon. So hopefully we'll hear back whether they. What they think of it, and certainly we meant it to be for them because we wanted it to be a kind of handbook for them going into a conclave. I mean, even if they don't choose these 19, at least they get a better idea of these 19. Obviously, you know, they're not going to get 120 in such detail, but at least they'll have these 19 who we think have a good chance. And and then for the faithful, we feel it's very important too, and you know, it's good for all of us to know who could become Pope and who to pray for and what to pray for when a conclave comes. And this hopefully will help that.
Yeah, 19. So it's 19 cardinals and it's what, like 500 something pages?
It's 700 pages. Yeah. Yeah. So it's quite
amazing.
A tome, yes.
It's
yes.
So exhaustive. I've never been blown away by a book and that just in the, in the sheer depth of the research, it's just extraordinary. So
yes,
it's,
But credit to my colleagues because they're the ones who did a lot of the heavy lifting, and it's really thanks to them and the editors and the people who backed this from the beginning, who really did it purely out of love for the church and the faith and for the papacy, and a lot of credit should go to them. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, outstanding. Well, we're almost up on the 20-minute mark, but I'll ask you one more question if you don't mind.
Sure.
Let's shift back to you a little bit. I'm curious what you think are going to be the necessary issues that the next pope is going to face. What issues is the next pope, in other words, going to be chosen for? What is his call going to be?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm really just a journalist. I don't really know what sort of is going through their mind and what priorities should be there for them. But I do sense from my readership and from others here in the Vatican that I speak to, that what's really needed is a cardinal who's going to really speak to the times and not with the times. I think there's a real need for a new pope to to speak, you know, and be relevant, not try to be relevant to the times, but be relevant by preaching the gospel and preaching the truths of the faith and the teachings of the church and being faithful to those. And I think if a pope does that, I think they will certainly unify the church and bring a lot of healing, I think. I think that's probably what they'll be looking for, I hope, anyway, and certainly a sort of an anchoring in the tradition and not to be traditionalist necessarily, but to have an anchoring in tradition and as I say, the fundamentals of the faith. And then I think on the practical level, they'll be needing to deal with the whole issue of curial reform again and really sorting out the finances and proper management and dealing with the media well and all these things which come with it. I think those governing aspects will be very much front and center, I think, for the next pope and will be needed somebody who has good governing abilities and hopefully you can see that through this book, through looking at their governing office as bishop, whether they have those qualities.
Yeah, well, one last micro question, if I may, sub question, we'll say. So I will ask you this only as a journalist. Several reviews of the book and other, you know, unrelated commentary on the church have emphasized that we need to readjust our view of Vatican II, and that has been a reoccurring theme. I think that was in the panel that you did in Rome right after the launch of the book. That issue came up as well. So, in your communication with bishops and cardinals, does that sound like it's valid?
I don't know. I mean, this most recent debate is quite recent. I haven't really heard much discussion here about it. Certainly, it's been on in the media in the US and elsewhere. I think here I haven't heard much, but it is clearly a big issue. We have it as a sort of subcategory in the book of where these different cardinals, their position on the council and how favorable they are to it, or whether they think there should be some sort of revision of it. I think that will be a considerable factor in this. And with others, they perfectly fine with it, and I think they feel it's all down to interpretation and so forth, and that perhaps that just needs a bit of tweaking. But I don't know. I think it's I think it could be a point of discussion. I'm not saying it definitely will be. I think it could be, though, especially if this debate continues and attracts more people to sort of ask questions. I think that could happen. Yes, certainly it's a big subject. It's quite a big subject in the book. Within the different profiles,
absolutely. Well, we sometimes, I guess, we like to think that our own pet projects are with the mind of the church, but that's not always necessarily true. But you know, possibly it will be. Possibly, you know, we'll get someone like Cardinal Sarah or Cardinal Burke who will begin to sort of rethink the way that we apply the documents of the Second Vatican Council to our pastoral and liturgical life. Well, who knows? Mm.
But certainly with the liturgy, I think that will happen. I don't know. I think there is a certain willingness to get back to what the church, what the council really taught about the liturgy, rather than all that came afterwards. That could well happen, yes.
I wish I'd written down his name, but I read there was at least one cardinal in the book that was downright hostile to the Latin Mass and said, you know, this reminds me of when I was growing up I don't want it anymore.
Cardinal Napier, I think it was. There are a few actually who are quite hostile to it in there. Yes, and again, that's quite a good indication, you know, where they stand on various things on the liturgy and other things too. Yeah,
true. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Penton, for joining us. I really do appreciate it. Unfortunately, this is all the time that we have, but I am grateful to you, and I am grateful to our listeners for tuning in, as always. I am Michael Warren Davis. He is Edward Penton, and this is The Crisis Point. Thank you all so much, and God bless you.